The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome in today's edition of ESPN SC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Shaka Hislop and Ali Moreno. Lots to come in today's program, but we'll kick things off in CONCACAF World Cup qualifying. Canada in action against Mexico. And what a result it was for the hosts in Edmonton, Canada, beating Mexico by 2-1. A Carl Lamin brace proving to be the difference between the two sides. And it's a result that now puts Canada top of qualifying. The US, of course, dropping points against Mexico. So after 8 matches, it's Canada who are top of the group. Let's welcome in, shall we? Sebastian Salazar is here.
There he is.
Sebi, how are you watching this match?
I was watching it with a lot of tension, which I think most Mexico fans are nowadays. Dan, I would like to thank you for the invite onto the show. Mexico, we're top of the CONCACAF qualifying table for 3 months. You had me on approximately 0 times to talk about it. 3. They lose 2 games, fall to 3rd. I get my invite. So thank you. Thank you very much.
Exactly. And you've got a bit of a Buffon hair going on these days. I mean, what's happening there? We should have you more to discuss that. How is this result being received in Mexico?
Well, you can imagine on the heels of what happened against the United States, there's a lot of people calling for Tata Martino's job. It's historic to see away defeats like this against the U.S. and Canada back-to-back. And I think you can almost accept the results, right? We know this is a different Canada. This isn't the Canada that struggled to even make it to the final round of CONCACAF qualifying in the 90s and early 2000. And the U.S. is a better team. So the results are one thing. It's the performances. You know, Mexico has been outplayed, and I think pretty obviously outplayed in these games against the United States and Canada. And that's not what we've seen from Mexico in the past. Usually you go away in CONCACAF, you lose, you draw. But Mexico dominates possession. They have the better chances. They just don't finish. That's not the script that we're seeing this time around. So I think on top of the general worry about losing games in qualifying, it's the way that Mexico is playing that's really, really concerning.
They're still going to qualify, aren't they, Manny?
They are. But to the point that Sevi's making there, not only are they being outplayed, in some of these games, they're also being outfought. They're almost surprised that some of these teams are generating as much possession as they are, generating as many chances as they are. Mexico's kind of like, wait. We're Mexico. Did you forget we're Mexico? We're going to win because we're Mexico. That's the same sort of attitude that got them into trouble in qualifying ahead of the 2014 World Cup. And I went through that whole qualifying cycle with Mexico, covering their matches. And that attitude of just showing up and saying, look, we're Mexico, we're going to win, in the end, put them in a playoff position. Eventually, they made it into the World Cup. What I would say about Mexico as a whole, the whole team, they're looking older and older and older by the second. There is a lack of athleticism in this team in key positions in which they cannot keep up with people that simply are faster than them. And they're more physical than them. And because their possession is not nearly as good, they get exposed for that lack of physicality and that lack of speed. And in the end, Mexico is having to chase games in a manner in which they haven't before. In the past, they've been able to control matches. They're not doing that now.
For me, listen, Mexico is a strange one. Because I thought, especially early on in the Gold Cup, you show the best of who they are. I thought their football was easily the best in the region. But then you go and lose the final. And ever since that, Mexico have not lived up to expectation. As good as Canada has been, and Sebi touched on it, I thought until Canada went 2-0 up, Mexico never bothered to play.
Right.
And they had the excuse of the snow and the cold temperatures. And only as Canada go 2 up, Mexico turn it up a gear and start to look like they can compete. Why does it take that trigger for Mexico to respond? What is it about Mexico, even mentally, that when they're playing well, they can't seem to get the better of the U.S. in particular, and on this occasion, the U.S.? They'll qualify, that may paper over the cracks. I know they're on the same points as Panama, I still believe Mexico finished top three. And that would paper over the cracks. But this is a flawed Mexico team that potentially is a whole lot better.
Mentally flawed team as well. And the strength of the mentality of this team is not quite there. And you knew full well going into this match against Canada, it's going to be cold.
Yeah.
Look, it's going to be cold, right? It's snowing outside. It's freezing outside. It's going to be cold. And they showed up with a feel almost like, did you know it's cold? It's cold out here, man. And it all, it's sort of a built-in excuse. And you don't expect this from Mexico, given what their position historically has been in CONCACAF. You would expect this team to come out and say, you know what, it's cold, but we're going to keep this ball moving. We're going to get this ball moving, and our technical ability is going to be better because we're going to be able to possess the ball in a manner in which they can't, and we're going to control the match like that. Mm-mm. It became a fight, and Mexico was like, I don't know about this. Too cold out here.
That's the thing for me. This Mexico team, it's not about they're a good footballing team. I think they can compete. It's all about men. It's all about their mentality. And now they have the excuse of Tata Martino, and they're throwing that into the mix. I don't think that's the issue. I understand how Mexico and how they hire and fire coaches at the national team level, so it's not unsurprising. But I don't believe Tata Martino is the issue.
Sevi, desperate to get in, so should we move on? No.
Go on, Sam. Just to agree with a little bit what the guys are saying, especially about the mentality. You know, the players, the stars for Mexico are no longer difference makers, even at the CONCACAF level. Chucky Lozano, Raul Jimenez, they're not the guys that they were 2 and 3 years ago before the pandemic. They're not having the impact on games. Forget a guy like Tecatito Corona, whose level has totally fallen off. That trident was supposed to redefine the ceiling for Mexican soccer. It hasn't happened. Hector Herrera, Andres Guardado, they're not reliable anymore. They're getting old. And even a guy like Memo Ochoa, this is a guy who has been a fixture for Mexico. The one thing you could truly rely on, his mistakes against Canada and the United States are ultimately what cost this team. So I think it is down to these players. I think there's actually some concern, not just about mentality and coach, but also the player pool. Like, they're good on paper, but right now they're not actually good on the field. And one other thing, Dan, to your question about are they going to qualify? Yes, I think Mexico are going to qualify, but that was never the point with Tata Martino. They're paying him $2.2 million a year. That's as much, if not more, than they've ever paid anybody else to have this job. And the goal was not for him to get this team qualified. It was to get through the famous quinto partido. And right now, based on how this team is playing, I think they're much more likely to go out in the group phase in Qatar than they are to get to any type of quarterfinal.
Seb, a word on Canada. They're very likable, aren't they?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, they really know who they are. They set up extremely well. And I think one thing that we learned last night is they're not just an Alfonso Davies team. Alfonso Davies has been not just a star man, but the impact player, the difference maker, the guy who gets the goal or the assist for this Canada team so far through qualifying until last night. Mexico made a tactical shift. They've been playing with a back four basically all of Tata Martino's time in charge. They go to a back five, and it neutralized Davies. And still, Canada were able to manufacture 3 points against Mexico at home. So I think they're a shoo-in to get to the World Cup. And honestly, with guys like Davies, Buchanan, Kyle Larin scoring, we didn't even see David last night or all that much of him. This Canada team is very, very dangerous. Their ceiling may not just be getting to the World Cup.
Of course, they're top of the group because the U.S. dropped points against Jamaica. They dropped two. It could have very easily been three, couldn't it? Had the goal stood late on in this tie. Hits the back of the net. It looks good. But it's a foul on Zimmerman that's been called. Quickly, Ali, yes, no?
No. It's both players competing for a header. One player jumps higher than the other and puts the ball in the back of the net. I don't think this is a foul.
Yeah, of course, that seems to be the opinion of most. This is what Greg Berhalter had to say.
I mean, he called it really early, so I was pretty, you know, it seemed like he was pretty confident of the call. And, you know, it's, you know, we've had this referee 3 times already. I think he's a good referee. I thought, you know, there was a couple hard challenges today that, you know, I think maybe yellow is the right thing, perhaps maybe red on one of them. But, you know, it's difficult. It really is difficult. And, you know, he called the whistle, he blew the whistle early, and that was a relief.
Can't he just say it was a goal? Can't he just say it?
No, you can't.
Why?
Because Berhalter has painted, or is painting himself, into this rather ridiculous corner. It's a goal. And we, whenever a call goes against the US, you will hear unified screams about VAR and the standard of officiating in CONCACAF and every other excuse you want to offer. The US benefit from a good call, and the consolation is, this is a good referee. You've had him three times, and he made the call really early. I mean, what is that? I simply do not get it. Put your stake in the ground somewhere. Stop dancing around it, as Berhalter has, because otherwise, when you do criticise referees, it comes back to bite you.
So if this shoe was on the other foot, I imagine his opinion, and indeed, you think US Twitter would melt down?
Yeah, no, for sure. I think anybody looking at that sees a perfectly legit Damian Lowe goal and can't imagine why it was called off. I do think there's a greater point about the quality of officiating in CONCACAF. It is a serious concern. That's a pretty obvious missed call right there for me. There's the one at the beginning of the Mexico-Canada game. Danielle Henry, you guys said it should have been a yellow. I thought you could have made a case that it could have been a red card as well against the Canadian center back when he fouls Chucky Lozano. No card given on that play. So there are real serious concerns about CONCACAF officiating, and on top of that, they don't have VAR to help them. Now, we do know that come the January window, come the March window, we will have VAR across CONCACAF qualifying, so hopefully that ends some of these debates, but again, we know it won't end all of them.
Should we talk about the handball as well? I know we were discussing this beforehand,
sure, Chad,
that
sure.
You felt that maybe Jamaica should have had a penalty for a handball.
Yes, I do.
Here.
I think that's a handball, especially when you see...
Oh, look at the drawing. I mean, we're getting fancy with the graphics
now. We couldn't afford to show it again, so we've just drawn it. This, of course, is the IFAB rules that changed, obviously, the sleeve becoming...
What about the hairstyle?
That's a bit of semi-hairstyle.
Yeah.
A bit of semi. Listen, for me, especially when you look at the defender, how he moves his arm towards the ball... I think this catches him right on shoulder into arm.
Oh, yeah, but that isn't handball, is it?
Look at where it catches his arm. It catches enough of his arm for me, without question.
It's kind of here, though, isn't it, Shank?
No, it's kind of here.
You used the word shoulder.
He moved his shoulder towards the ball, and it catches him here.
I think the damning evidence is for Richards is the fact that he chicken wings the ball.
Yes.
That movement of chicken wing... That's the one that you kind of go, mommy, this
you
could be...
You can chicken wing and still shoulder it.
This is a chicken wing into an arm.
When you chicken wing, you lose your benefit of the doubt. If it wasn't for the chicken wing, maybe you can make an excuse. But that chicken wing tells it all.
Yep.
That chicken wing tells it all.
Yeah, and you like a chicken wing.
Sammy?
I do like a chicken wing.
What about the benefit of the doubt for the... for the late deflection there from Tyler Adams, huh? I mean, that obviously factors into it. I don't think it's a penalty. Not for me, nope.
The benefit of the doubt for the deflection? No, there's no doubt. It deflected. There's no doubt there, Sebi. It was a deflection.
Where do you want Chris Richards' arms to be, Shaka? Where do you want them to be?
I want him
literally
to be
tucked up against his body.
I don't want him to be down here. You can't throw your arm down there.
Do up against. Yeah.
Not down there. It could be anywhere else on the whole field for all I care.
Sebastian Salazar, as always, thank you very much. Football Americas, of course, returns with Sebi and Herc. A lot for them to digest. The latest edition will be available here on Plus tomorrow.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
No doubt about it, a big game in Commonwealth World Cup qualifying. Argentina taking on Brazil. This would end goalless. Plenty of instant, though, within it. 35th minute, Otamendi really should have got sent off for a clear elbow. VAR looked at it and decided, no, actually, it's fine. No card is sufficient enough punishment. We then saw a couple of skills. It's got Di Maria, put it through the legs of Vinicius Jr. Nice nutmeg there. And then Vinicius Jr. with a nice sort of rainbow kick in the second half. Little flick over Molina. But in the end, it finishes Argentina 0 Brazil. Now, Brazil, of course, already through to the World Cup. Argentina one step closer. Oh, I'm being told Argentina have actually qualified for the World Cup as well.
All right, good job, Dan.
Jules is still with us. Jules, what's your big takeaway from that? The rainbow flick or the nutmeg?
I'm more of a rainbow flick guy, simply because we see more of the nutmegs than the rainbow flick, the way Vinny Jr. did it and succeeded. Against Montiel as well, that was pretty special. Watching the game, I was like, oh wow, pretty special. And because after that, it's a good cross for Paqueta, who just doesn't hit the ball as well as he should have done, really, on his left foot too. But I thought the tension, you could sense the tension. There was a lot of argument. Rodrigo De Paul maybe could have been sent off for two yellows easily. That was certainly a red for Otamendi, maybe a pen on Vinicius as well in the game. At times, the pressure and the rhythm were okay, but they were not clearly not enough chances. I don't think Messi was fit. Neymar was obviously out injured. So there was something missing in that game, but certainly the tension was there.
Yeah, it wasn't pretty, was it?
No, but...
I like your jacket, very pretty.
Well, thank you. Colorful. I like it. My wife didn't like it, I have to tell you.
Did she not?
No. Frowned upon when I came out of the house.
Like, standard. Like, standard in the rental house.
It's kind of bright, isn't it?
Oh, wow. And
that's all right. I power through.
You just wear it all the time. Sleep in it, the whole shebang.
I should. Look, I thought, and this is not a game that I want to watch all the time, this style of game, but it was old school in so many ways. And I actually found myself entertained by the fact that there was a lot of that tension that Jules is talking about. And it was physical. And it was a lot of back and forth in terms of the physicality through the midfield. If you wanted to dribble the ball or pass the ball in that middle area, well, it was a minefield. Do so at your own risk, because people were getting slide tackles all over the place. I thought that Fred and Fabinho were excellent for Brazil. And in the midfield for Argentina, Rodrigo De Paul was always active. Cristian Romero, who played center back up until he got injured for Argentina. There was one play in the first half. The ball gets played over the top to Vinicius, and he's seen Vinicius about 40 yards away. And about 10 yards away, when he's making the run across, he's decided, I'm going to slide tackle the ball, Vinicius, and anything that comes into that area. Vinicius looks at him out of the corner of his eye and says, I don't want any part of this. He's skipping over the challenge. But it was a game of many of those. A lot of challenge, a lot of physicality, and moments, flashes of brilliance. A little bit from Di Maria, a little bit from Vinicius. Vinicius should have scored when he tried to chip the ball over Emiliano Martinez, unable to execute it. I thought that in order for both of these teams to be able to break each other down, they had to have more moments of quality. They did not have that consistently enough. But overall, I actually thought it was a good game.
Messi played the whole game. How was that received in Paris, Jules?
I can tell you that Leonardo was stressed the whole game. He was late Paris time to watch it, but the big fear, and we mentioned it at the start of the international break, for everybody at PSG was that Messi either got a setback or got another injury or make the injury that he had before. And again, we could see that he was not really fully fit for that game against Brazil. Really wanted to play. Lasted the whole game because he kind of had to, really, but not fully fit. And they were just scared that something would happen to him. It looked like nothing happened to him, that he flew back on private jet to Paris with everybody else. Okay, so they're just happy with that for the moment.
Elsewhere in qualifying, what happened to Venezuela, Ali?
We had a difficult time, Dan.
Peru won by two goals to one. Meanwhile, Uruguay struggling, losing 3-0 away against Bolivia. We saw 0-0 draw as well, didn't we, between Colombia and Paraguay. Elsewhere, Ecuador, a good 2-0 win over Chile. Look at the table. Ecuador looking good, yeah, Ali?
Ecuador. Yeah, and I thought Ecuador was actually kind of pushing in the wrong direction, and then all of a sudden they get that result against Venezuela, and then they follow that up away against Chile, and yes, now they're sitting very, very pretty.
Who's joining them?
I know who's not.
Thank you, wow. Shaq. Appreciate that. Paraguay, yes, I know. Paraguay is not. Look, it's still very close. And obviously the number tells you that. But Peru gets a couple of results. Now they jump ahead a bunch of people. Then Colombia, who could have won a game at home against Paraguay if they could only find a way to score a goal. That seems impossible nowadays, but still they're in it. Uruguay is really the team that for me is in trouble because they seem to be spiraling out of control. The negative momentum, unable to stop that. And now there is conversations as to whether Tavares should keep the job. Now, Tavares is a, when it comes to coaching in South America, he is a legend, and certainly in Uruguay. To think of him being pushed out the door, it just kind of tells you now Uruguay is reaching moments of desperation. They're depending on Luis Suarez still. They're depending on Edinson Cavani. Luis Suarez cannot move, has difficulties finding the spaces in South America, and Edinson Cavani has difficulties staying fit. And so where's the offense going to come for Uruguay? That's a big question. They haven't been able to figure it out.
Meanwhile, for Colombia, I've been told to ask about James Rodriguez.
Yeah, James Rodriguez was brought in because we talk about desperation. The desperation of Colombia trying to find somewhere, somehow, a source of creativity, a goal, anywhere. Think about Colombia not having scored in four games in a row. That's bad enough. But now you bring Paraguay. And this is a must-win game in Barranquilla. Paraguay struggling themselves, and Colombia unable to create anything. With James on the field, without James on the field, it doesn't make a difference. Right now, Colombia is in trouble in the sense that they're changing strikers. They're taking two guys out at a time. They're putting another two guys in, and it doesn't make a difference. It doesn't change the fact that this team has zero confidence in front of goal, and it shows in the way that they're playing.
Still higher than Venezuela, though.
We have zero confidence in front of goal and zero confidence in our goal.
By the way, get ready for tomorrow. It's Shaka's International Power Rankings.
That's right.
How much time have you spent on this, Shaka?
A lot.
0%.
It's all about the data input.
Uh-huh.
Wow. The algorithm.
Just making noises.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Ed Woodward announced today a 16% rise in United revenue, but said the priorities, well, these financial results today demonstrate our resilience through the pandemic. Our top priority is success on the pitch. The manager, players, and everyone at the club are determined to achieve that objective. So that's nice moving forward. I'm sure everybody's on board. The press seems to be getting a slightly different angle on all of this, questioning the support that Solskjaer has within the locker room, the support that Solskjaer has outside of the locker room, and Zinedine Zidane once again linked to a move to Old Trafford. For more on this, let's welcome in, shall we, Mark Ogden, Julian Laron, and Nader Manua join us. Mark, why do these rumours persist?
Well, because United aren't doing very well and nobody really has the ultimate faith in Solskjaer that he can turn it around. I mean, after the 5-0 defeat at home to Liverpool, the briefing from the club was Solskjaer's safe, there's no concern, he'll get it right, etc, etc. Remained the case after the 2-0 defeat against Man City. But prior to that, after the Liverpool game, that you know the club made sensible moves and assessed the options out there. And the options were, well, obviously Antonio Conte was one option at the time, didn't fancy him. The two guys they would take now if they were available are Brendan Rodgers at Leicester and Mauricio Pochettino at PSG, but neither are available. They're both gettable if United are prepared to pay the money, but at this stage they're not. So that leaves Zidane. And, you know, I was told that two or three weeks ago United looked at Zidane and thought that the numbers didn't stack up. He'd want a lot of money to come, he'd want a lot of money to spend on players. Weren't really convinced that he would, you know, master a league he's never played, doesn't know the league, doesn't know the players very well. So Zidane for me is a rank outsider for this job, but the rumours are there because Solskjaer is struggling. They've got a tough game at Watford at the weekend, then it's Chelsea away next week. If they keep losing, then they might have to turn to Zidane because the other options aren't, at the moment, gettable.
We had Frank on the show yesterday, Jules, who kind of said slightly something different when talking about Zidane, the possibility of going to United. And he's like, he's quite happy in Madrid. Life's pretty good at the moment. He doesn't really need that headache. He's still very much got eyes on the national team.
Exactly, Dan. That's right. That's what we keep saying on the show as well. He knows that whenever Deschamps steps down, which more likely it would be after the World Cup in Qatar in just a year time, or maybe after the Euros in 2024 in Germany. But sooner rather than later, that job will be available, and it's Zidane's. It's pretty much all agreed. We all know that he's the one coming next after Deschamps, if he's not already in the job. So for him to go to United and signing, let's say, a 2.5-year deal or 3.5-year deal, doesn't make much sense if in a year time he has to step down from the United job to go and take the France job. On top of that, like Mark said, the fight that it's England, that he's never really been keen on as a player or as a manager, where he doesn't speak the language, which is a huge issue for him, who based a lot of his management on management, and be able to have that kind of relationship with his players, mostly by being very close to his dressing room. If you don't speak the language, already there's a barrier between you and them, you and your players. So despite Ronaldo and Varane being at the club, I still think it's a very long shot for them to get Zidane.
Why don't United just go to Leicester and give them lots of money for Brendan Rodgers, Mark?
Well, I mean, I don't think it'd take that much money. Let's be honest, that United paid $40 million for Donny van de Beek and they never play him. So, you know, they could get a manager for half of that. So I don't understand why clubs are so reluctant to spend a decent... No, but it's a serious point. Why are clubs so reluctant to spend on a manager's compensation when a player who could cost 2-3 times that doesn't have the same value? Now, I understand that a player might have a resale value, but the manager or the coach is the most important person at the club. So I think United are, you know, hoping naively that Solskjaer will turn it around, but that, you know, what you see on the pitch doesn't suggest it will be turned around, and that the players have lost faith in Solskjaer, that the tactics are, you know, bewildering at times because they're non-existent. The fans have lost faith in Solskjaer. So it's only a matter of time now before he actually goes. He can't limp on forever. And the next games coming up are tough. You know, Watford away, Chelsea away, Arsenal at home. I mean, it's really hard to see United winning any of those games. I mean, Watford away maybe, but, you know, this is Man United. We shouldn't be saying they might win at Watford and not win against Chelsea. So I do think they're going to have to make a decision pretty soon. Rodgers, I'm told, wouldn't be averse to going to Man United, despite his Liverpool past. I think Pochettino would be keen as well, despite the fact he's tied up at PSG. But United have to make a move. They've got to be bold. They have to say, right, we're the biggest club in the world, or so they keep telling us. Prove it. Go and get somebody's manager.
Nathan, when you step out of your mansion in Manchester, what are the people on the street saying about who they want?
It's a long walk to get to those streets, but I think overall, you know, it's like everybody's been saying there. You know, Manchester United as a club, they are the biggest in the world, but they seem to be behaving in a completely different manner. And the way that they are on the field, like, it's quite staggering, to be honest. Most of the people I know who are Man United fans, they're so dejected because they have lost faith in the manager, and they're starting to lose faith in the players as well. Like, what is the feeling there? And I think the fact that they're suggesting that maybe, you know, Solskjaer can have the whole season and so on, like, is this what they're willing to accept? Is this position now, say, being 9 points off top of the table going into, like, the middle of November, is that acceptable for Man United? I don't think so, yet still here we are, where nothing seems to be changing.
And that's the striking thing, isn't it? Like it or not, if you're Real Madrid, if you're Chelsea, they'd have sacked Solskjaer 5 or 6 times. Yet United seem to be keeping, I don't know, burying their head in the ground.
Well, because this is the same club that re-signed this manager, re-upped this manager.
Yep.
And they said, it's almost as if to say, look, we believe in this guy until we don't believe in this guy. But it's, again, a sign of a club that takes a step forward and 2 steps back. And the plan, the objectives, and how you're able to achieve those objectives don't quite match up. And so, yeah, we say Manchester United should be expected to be doing this, that, and the other. But that has been the story of Manchester United for the last 8-10 years, where you are expecting something from a club and they don't seem to do it on a consistent basis. And so everybody's losing faith on Solskjaer. The players. The fans. Yeah, and what about the decision makers? Mm-hmm. Because this is really what matters. The decision makers are the ones that have to say, look, this is not sustainable any longer. Regardless of what the players are saying, regardless of what the fans are saying, you, as a decision maker, you look at your current situation as a club, and you have to make the decision and understanding. This team is no longer playing for this coach. Regardless of who this coach is, he's got to go.
The thing for me is it's about culture and about arrogance. Manchester United have us believe that their culture is sticked by their manager for the long term. Strangely, it's a culture developed around Sir Alex Ferguson, the most successful coach in English football. Yet they're still trying to sell us that narrative, that they stand by their coaches, they're there for the long term, and they find themselves now with this coach behind the eight ball. That's about arrogance. An arrogance of a football club, as big as they are, as successful as they are, as profitable as they continue to be, believing that whoever they want, whenever they want, is available to them. They managed to pull it off with Cristiano Ronaldo this summer, which strangely has been the highlight of Manchester United's season so far, nicking a player from City. And they believe that whenever they're ready for a player, whenever they're ready for a manager, all they have to do is go knocking on the door. And that's not the case anymore. Far more clubs, not only in English football, in world football, can lay a claim to the Zidanes and the Ten Hags and the Erling Haalands and whoever else it is you're after. Manchester United have had this belief around who they are that, in my opinion, is misplaced and has got them into the problems that they're in now.
And to your point about arrogance, this whole idea that, well, Zidane is out there, go get him. Mm. Well, maybe Zidane doesn't want to come. Mm. Maybe he looks at your club and he says, no, why would I want to take care of that mess now? Why would I jump into this sort of situation when I don't have to?
Right.
Oh, well, because we're Manchester United and that should be enough? Not anymore.
Mark, what will it take? What will it take for the board to come together and think, you know what, maybe Solskjaer isn't the man? Because we've seen them obviously humiliated by Liverpool and Manchester City. We kept feeling that that was going to be the tipping point. What is that tipping point?
Well, it's money, Dan, and it always gets down to money with the Glazers. And the situation is that, you know, the Glazers are happy every year to finish top four. For them, that is the barometer. If they finish top four, they're in the Champions League, they're earning the money. If or when it becomes clear that they've got a battle on for top four, then that's when Solskjaer might be in trouble. And I think Arsenal's resurgence under Mikel Arteta, Tottenham may get going under Antonio Conte. You've got to say the top three will pull away. I think that, you know, Liverpool, Chelsea and Man City will be the top three. West Ham, I suspect, might drop away. But if Arsenal get some momentum, if Tottenham get going again, then United are going to struggle for top four. And as soon as it becomes evident to the Glazers that they're going to miss out on the top four, the Champions League, the money that brings, that's when Solskjaer's in trouble. But that could be 2 months away. It really could. And that is the danger that United let it drift. And let's not forget, with David Moyes, with Louis van Gaal, with Jose Mourinho, it was obvious way before that they sacked those coaches that it had gone wrong. They dithered and they waited too long to get rid of all three. And the situation with Solskjaer is the same. The wait is too long, too late. They'll wait till maybe January, February time and the season's gone. Another season wasted. And, you know, Shaq is right, it is arrogance. But it's also a lack of intelligence in terms of football intelligence, a lack of kind of knowledge of what the game is about. You know, why is it in Zidane? Because he won three Champions Leagues, great. But what are his tactics? What's his game plan? What players is he like? Why is he a good fit for Man United? I don't think any of these questions have any answers at Old Trafford, but is he a big name? He's a big name, keeps United at the top of the commercial tree for all the wrong reasons. They're not a clever club in terms of recruitment anymore. They're just not.
Mark, I just want to turn the page slightly and focus on Manchester City, one player in particular that keeps popping up more and more, it seems, when it comes to rumours of transfers, and that is Raheem Sterling. Barcelona reporting today interested. Well, I'm interested in the karaoke world tour. That's not going to happen. But we know that they've got no money. But what is the situation there with Raheem Sterling and his future at City?
Well, he's got 18 months left in his contract, and there's no contract as yet forthcoming. He's not shown any kind of appetite to sign one. You know, I was told a few weeks ago that Pep signed Jack Grealish in the summer because he felt that the team needed to move on and that Sterling has served his purpose. I think technically Sterling is no longer good enough for this Man City team. Pep wants it to play like, you know, people like Grealish and Foden and Silva, the players that are very good on the ball, very good in tight spaces. Sterling had his moment, Sterling delivered at the time, but now he's no longer equipped to play in the City team. And, you know, but Sterling wants big money, City will want a decent fee for him, and the market is absolutely dead. So City won't be able to find a buyer, Sterling won't be able to find a club that will pay him what he wants. So they're in a difficult position because he's not going to play. He really isn't going to play as often as he wants to play because he's no longer a player that's equipped to play in the way that Pep wants to play. This City team now is playing like the Barcelona team played, you know, under Pep, with the forwards, the final third of the pitch, the ball moves very quickly. That isn't Sterling's game.
Is that fair, Nathan?
Possibly. But looking back there, you can see how effective he has been for City. But you look at the way that they play now, and, you know, say, for example, in that last game against United, like, you can throw Phil Foden out there, throw Gabriel Jesus on the other side, put KDB down through the middle, and it's just the way that it is, and they just look just as good. And I think that's the difference now, because he's coming under pressure for his position from so many different people. Like, even the fact that Grealish now has been, was dropped essentially for that game, like, what is the pecking order at City? I'm not sure, but at the moment, Stone doesn't seem to be a part of that. And it's a shame because, like you say, for years, he's done very, very well for City and he still has that belief that he can make a big difference. But it's just about trying to get into the side now. And for the people who are in there at the minute, they're looking immaculate, to be honest.
Away from Manchester, how high is his stock, Jules?
That's a good question, Dan, because despite the good Euros that he had, and of course he was very good for England, at club level with City hasn't been the same really now for 18 months where his numbers have dropped, clearly. I think last season, again, apart from the Euros, was one of his worst in terms of returning goals and assists, because big clubs know that he's not a starter at City. So they're thinking, OK, if he's not a starter at City, why would he be a starter with us, for example? And in all those top clubs, there's already a lot of competition for in his position. So it's going to be tricky. The only thing is, when he would get down to the summer and only 1 year left on his contract, his price would lower massively. But he wants big money in wages. That's why he would want for his new deal at City. That's why he would want to leave City and go to any other top club in England or in Europe. So again, That has to be discussed as well. How much money are you ready to offer Raheem Sterling in terms of wages, plus commission for his agent, and etc. It would be a tricky move for him if he wants to change clubs in the summer, for sure.
Mark, where's his next club going to be?
It's a tough question to answer, Dan, because I don't see him going next summer because of the money involved. I think it's really difficult for him to find a club and for City to sell him. So, you know, in 18 months' time, when he's a free agent, then maybe he has a better list of options. But I don't think Raheem Sterling in his late 20s is a player that a lot of clubs are going to be chasing. They're going to be looking further down the pecking order at younger players, the emerging talent. And I think, you know, maybe Sterling has to lower his sights as well and think that maybe he's not going to get this super club that he wants. He might have to go for a tier two club in the Premier League. He may end up at Newcastle, who knows, you know, in 18 months' time if they're still in the Premier League. But that's what he's looking at. I don't think he's looking at a Real Madrid, Barcelona, PSG. I don't think, or Juventus. He's not at that level anymore. It costs too much money and doesn't deliver enough for me to be at that level now.
Good stuff, guys. As always, thank you very much. Be sure to check out the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. That drops, of course, on Thursday. The boys reflecting on a busy week of international football, plus looking ahead to the return of domestic action this weekend.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We've talked about it a lot, haven't we? Dani Alves officially presented as a new Barcelona player. Love in life, absolutely, is the Brazilian at the moment.
Truth optional.
Yeah, exactly. Great scenes there for the former Barca man coming back to hopefully resurrect their season. Just a reminder, it kicks things off at the Camp now against Espanyol in the Catalan derby. What a match that will be, live here on ESPN+. Coverage will start at 2:30 Eastern. Dani Alves can't play until January. I'm sure we'll be there in a very much supporting role.
Okay.
Meanwhile, Bundesliga, of course, back this weekend as well here on ESPN+. It all starts on Friday with top of the table Bayern Munich away against Augsburg. That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on, especially Sebastian.
Oh, yeah.
Always lovely. Always lovely to see.
He brought something special.
Always lovely to see Sebi in his hair here. Be sure to stay tuned. Extra Time is next. Shaka and Ali, of course, here to answer your tweets. We also welcome Nadim back as well to answer some of your questions. Stay with us. Welcome into Extra Time. Shaka's here. Ali's here with the jacket his wife hates.
I don't think she likes it very much.
Nader with a very enthusiastic wave.
Yes.
In it to win it. In it to win it.
Past midnight in England, isn't it, Nader? Late for you there. How have you spent International Week? What have you been up to?
I had my birthday last week. So I'm 35 now, officially retired. Just spent time with the kids. I've enjoyed it.
What was the best birthday present you got?
I got my son bought me a football. Got me a soccer ball. And it was like, oh, thank you. And he's like, oh, yeah, we can play together. And I thought I could think of nothing worse. But still, you know, it's encouraging. It's encouraging.
Father of the year, Nader Manua.
Yep,
thank
there
you
he
very
is.
Much
yes,
for
sir.
That.
There
That's
he
me.
Is.
That's what? Me. Yeah.
Nader, with Dani Alves coming back to Barca to help the locker room out, are there any players you played with whose job was to help out the locker room or assist the coach?
Not really, no, not really, because most people that are coming that I've played with, like you're paying to have them there, so they might as well play and do really well as well. It's not just about the locker room. So no, I don't think so, to be honest. It's interesting. Barcelona are in a very interesting place at the moment, I'd say.
Did you have a cheerleader in the locker room? You were definitely not the cheerleader, Ali.
You do know that. First of all, I was a positive presence in the locker room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
But I will tell you this. As I was mulling whether I should retire or not, which clearly it was time.
Yes.
The reason that some of these teams were talking to me about the possibility of continuing to play was indeed to do this veteran leadership presence, cheerleading in the locker room. And I could not bring myself to do it.
Right, because you don't like people particularly.
And that's sort of basic when you have to cheerlead.
Yes, exactly.
No, but I think you prepare yourself your whole life in order to play at a certain level. And once you're not playing at that level, you know it yourself, you feel it. The last thing you want to do is see people playing in front of you that you know full well are not better than what you were. But you just can't do it anymore.
Right.
And it is hard. It's hard to then show up every day and say, come on, guys, let's go do this. This is great. Right. This is fantastic. I'm not going to play. The playing part is why we prepared ourselves. It's to play. It's to win and to feel part of something bigger than yourself. When you can't do it anymore, then it's time to go.
Go on, Nathan.
I was just going to say, everything you've said is true, Ali, except for the third choice goalkeeper. I think that's the role which we've kind of described there. The person who literally knows they're not going to play, but they're going to go and support the other crazy people who just dive around for a living. That's what I'd say. Definitely third choice goalkeeper.
I'm not looking at you, Shaq.
Shaq and Hyslop, welcome to the conversation.
I've never been a third choice goalkeeper.
All right. Okay, easy now. I said I wasn't looking at you.
Been second choice many a time. I can't think of anybody. Of all the kind of older players who I've played with and have come in, they've all contributed significantly. Whether you're talking about Peter Beardsley at Newcastle, Ian Wright at West Ham, Stuart Pearce at both of those football clubs, they all played regularly.
Right.
Nobody was just there making up the numbers.
Does Nadim think Grealish's addition to City was unnecessary?
I don't think unnecessary is the word. I think he's a long-term thing, and I think he will get better. So no, I don't think it's unnecessary at all. I think he fits into the system. He's going to learn it and get better, and he's going to bring something different to the field. Because earlier on the show we were talking about Sterling not being in his best form. Well, there's somebody pushing him, and maybe that'll bring out the best in him and the best in Grealish as well. So I'm here for it.
He's been disappointing though, hasn't he, Nathan?
Yeah, so far, but he's early. He didn't sign a 6-month deal, so I think he'll be just fine.
Still quite disappointing.
Yeah, you'd be as disappointed as you want to be, Dan, but I'm not getting involved in this. I can hear the keyboards going already. He's been disappointing so far, Dan. So far. Yeah.
100 million for disappointment.
$100
for that jacket.
Dan could get you disappointment for a whole lot less.
Yes. For free, really.
How would Shaka describe the atmosphere for Trinidad away to Jamaica at the National Stadium?
Trinidad away to Jamaica?
Yes.
Jamaica's a tough place to go. I was telling Stevie, they have a pride in the office, as they call it, National Stadium. That's tough to get the better of. I don't think I've won in Jamaica playing.
Well, that doesn't narrow it down.
I mean, if that's the bar.
What's my comparison here? I only played for one country. That's all I got.
But if that's the standard.
Very good.
Okay.
Ali, who would you say is the GOAT of drawing fouls? Present company excluded.
Luis Suarez is.
Yeah,
really
that's
good.
Who kind of sprung to mind.
Yeah, Luis Suarez is really, really good. I would say, and he does a lot of the things that as he receives the ball, and I find myself watching. I'm like, oh yeah, that's a classic one. That's a good move.
Yeah.
That's a good one. That's an oldie but a goodie. He brings a lot of nuance to the way that he plays.
You were seeing Luis Suarez with a sense of look of admiration on your face.
Yeah.
You're like, oh man, he falls over like nobody's business, man.
I'll tell you a quick story. We're playing against Uruguay at home in Venezuela, right? And corner kick, the ball, it was one of those long corner kicks that ends up on the other side. And now I found myself, for whatever reason, 1v1 against Luis Suarez because he had run out to that space. And now I'm marking against Luis Suarez. That's not the place I want to be to begin with, right? He's got me isolated. And then he kind of trips over the ball a little bit, and I'm able to make the challenge, clear it out for, I don't know, a goal kick or whatever it was. And now this whole stadium is packed, and I'm giving it one of these. Yeah! Come on! You know I had it under control.
You know who's good? Well, Blanco for Mexico.
Yes!
Oh, goodness me.
Yes,
I have never played against a more frustrating player than Blanco.
Right.
In Mexico, he gets everything. Right. It's ridiculous. Ridiculous.
And a guy
there's
who
no, no, to your point, there's no nuance to it.
Right.
He's just running a straight line. I will just fall over.
And so unathletic looking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The guy is running, you think he's in pain. You think he's having difficulties. What's wrong with this guy? And then all of a sudden he finds a pass, he finds a goal, he dies, he gets a foul, and they win the game 3-0, he scored two goals and assisted on the other, and you're still figuring out what happened here.
Nadim, how did you get on with Luis Suarez?
Everything that Ali said there about him is exactly correct, and it's very, very frustrating because he sells it so well. Like, he could be pulling your arm, and before you know it, he's on the floor. And the referees run over to you, like, oh, how could you do this to him? Like, Suarez is so good. Like, obviously, he's still good now, but when I played against him for Liverpool, like, he was almost like he was close to prime. He was incredible, and it was a kind of joy looking back to have played against him, but it wasn't a joy for the 90 minutes, I'll tell you that.
I bet. Apart from getting angry with Lee Mason, the referee, I don't know that story. What did you do to Lee Mason?
What?
I did nothing to Lee Mason. Nothing. I don't know what this question's all about.
Did he buy you a football for your birthday?
Yeah, probably.
Is that where it all
probably.
Went wrong?
I think so.
No.
Nadim, tell us about the goal that you scored versus Chelsea at the Bridge. Will that be your best goal ever that you scored in the Premier League? Well, exactly. It's not exactly a big
Bridge.
Pool.
Rich, that's yes. Oh yeah, I did score.
Have you
bridge,
seen
actually.
This
yeah.
goal?
Yeah, I did.
I have not.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it once before.
Nadim kind of stumbles on the ball and it keeps stumbling over it like for quite a while and somehow everything just opens up in front of him
it's just a continuous, like 40 yards of him
almost falling over takes it around the goalkeeper stumbles and scores.
It's funny. It's literally almost 10 years to the day since that happened. That's incredible that you should bring it up now. And that was the first goal that Chelsea conceded at home in the league that season. So I broke their duck. It was me. They were the reigning champions. And I did that. And I've got a goal of the season award over there. Remind me of it. So yeah, thanks for that, Dan.
Goal
that
of the
great.
Season. Who voted for that?
Well, it's about 100,000 Sunderland supporters. But, you know, neither here nor there, is it?
Again, a very small pool of goals to choose. That is it. Thank you very much. We will be back on your screens tomorrow to announce Shaka's international power ranking.
Whoa.
It'll be the final ones. Final ones of 2021.
What? That's even more pressure.
Oh, it really is going to be. How are we going to sleep tonight?
Yes.
What?
Very deep sleep.
I'll sleep okay.
Yes, you will.